Oh, I love when we get to talk to Thelma Adams. She's one of my favorite guests. She is here today because she has a brand new novel out. In turn of the century New York, a mobster rises and his favorite sister struggles between loyalty and life itself. How far will she go when he commits murder? Okay, right there. You got me.
Yeah,
right there.
She goes pretty far, huh?
Yes. I mean, right there. Flipping the familiar script of The Sopranos, Boardwalk Empire. You do not need to wear those if you don't want to.
Yeah.
The Godfather, the new book, Bittersweet Brooklyn, explores the shattering impact of mob violence on the women expected to mop up the mess. Winding its way over decades, it's a family saga that plunges readers into a dangerous past revealed through the perspective of a forgotten yet vibrant woman. Thelma Adams is the author of the best-selling historical novel, The Last Woman Standing, and Playdate. She has been with us for all of her novels, thank goodness, and this is her third, and we're very excited, not to mention her stops on talking about the Oscars. She co-produced the Emmy-winning Feud, Betty and Joan, and... Additionally, she's a prominent film critic, having been the in-house film critic for Us Weekly and the New York Post. She is one of our favorites. Thelma Adams, how are you?
I am good. Let's talk. I am so happy to see you.
So here's one of the things. Here's one of the good parts and the bad parts of my job. The good parts is that you are nice enough, so when you're finished your novel, you send it to me like almost a year ago or whenever it was.
Right.
And so I've read it. I read it a long time ago. Still with me. I still know in here. But I may be a little rusty.
It's okay.
But you read it. But I'm excited. So I've been excited for this for a long time, and I'm glad we finally get to talk about it. So congratulations
on the
new novel. So there are some things here that I think are really interesting.
Let's talk about those.
Well, I mean, so here they are in no particular order. The idea of the place, Brooklyn, the idea of this particular woman, fascinating, and the also the story of the Judaism that is discussed within the novel as well. And I guess to actually ask you a question to start off the interview.
Okay, kick it off.
Would this be something that you would have written in the same way? Because I think probably the answer would be yes otherwise. But in the same way, if we weren't going through the Me Too movement? Because it seems to reflect that in many ways.
Wow. You know, I think, oddly enough, I think women of my generation, and I graduated from Berkeley in 81.
Okay.
We thought we had.
You didn't
Me
have
Too.
To tell us that, but that's fine.
It's okay. We thought that we were liberated. We thought we were going to get equality. We thought that we had equal education, equal opportunity. And I think what we've discovered is how thorny it's been as we entered the workforce and as we tried to have families and, you know, got married, had families, juggled everything within an inch of its life. And I think this story actually has been marinating with me for a long time because I wondered about this woman who's the heroine here, or the protagonist is probably the better way to put it. She was a liberated woman before her time, and I wanted to know what the costs were because the costs were not that high for me. But she really pays for wanting to be her own person.
It is interesting because I was thinking of books that have come out over the years that have been about, I think of Cokie Roberts, like Founding Women, and there are certainly women writers who come out and say these are the forgotten women of history. Your book, though, I think, yes, a novel, but it's telling us about a real woman who came in and did these incredible things, but almost as a, you know, this is what the power structure really is. You know, this is what really is happening.
What do you mean?
Meaning that of how important her role is in that equation.
Well, I think in this case, you know, we know this story. We know the story of Boardwalk Empire. We know the story of the mob. We grew up, you know, reading The Godfather, watching The Godfather Part 1, 2, and 3. And I always think about that great Godfather scene at the beginning, you know, where there's this big wedding and there's a bride and there's, you know, and there's a mother. But we don't know how they feel that day. All we know is how the men feel and what the business they're conducting at this wedding or the sex they're having at this wedding. I usually use a different phrase, but I'm trying for the good one there.
Go with what you know.
Go with what you know. So I felt like, who were the women and where did they come from and how did they squeeze a little joy out of their lives?
There's a lot of joy in this book, but there's a lot of heartache too.
Right. I think also there's, for me, the joy. Like, it's easy to kind of think about. You could even say it was bittersweet. I will tell you what the original title was: Kosher Nostra, which my family.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
I know.
So know why they didn't want to publish it that way.
I know. So it is bittersweet. I think that these are people, whether they're in, you know, the Jewish mafia or they're the fellow travelers, the sisters, they knew how to have a good time. They knew how to feel joy. They loved to dance. This is a family, and this is a character who loves to dance. And there is something that repeats even from, you know, British novels, Saturday night and Sunday morning, that these were people who lived in small, really bright bursts, even within their own lifetimes.
In those bursts, the idea for, as you say, it was been marinating for a while.
A really long time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about because I mentioned Brooklyn, but I also mentioned the fact that this is a Jewish woman. So give us a sense of how you came across this person in the first place.
She's my grandmother.
There you go. Okay.
She is my grandmother. She has my name. But you could have put the story that was handed down to me into two sentences. And I really wanted to know, given this strange name I have and this strange spirit I have, what was she really like since I never met her?
Okay. So that brings up to the fourth question on my list.
Okay, here we go.
Which I don't really have a list, but I'm
okay. Yeah, I know,
for dramatic effect. Which is, so you could have written a memoir.
No,
or you could have written
written memoir.
I know that.
Yeah,
but you could have written about her. But you, in other words, you chose fiction deliberately.
I chose fiction deliberately in part because, like The Last Woman Standing or even Playdate, I like to write books about people who aren't in the headline. So Last Woman Standing was about the Jewish wife of Wyatt Earp, whose
right.
story was really footnotes in his life. And here we have a character who basically appears, doesn't have a birth certificate that I could find, appears in census records here and there. There's a wedding certificate. But really, I did not know her. I knew her because I knew my father and how vibrant and wild he was. But also, in asking a relative about her, he looked at me. He was in his 70s or 80s. And he looked at me and he said, "She was dissolute." And I think he wanted to shut me up, but my God, he opened up a door. And I
wow.
was like, what does that mean?
What does that mean? What does that mean?
Yeah. And he went on to say that she looked like me, but thinner. You know, the double compliment. She looked like me, but thinner, kind of like olive oil. And I'm like, my God, who the heck is this woman? And did she kick some butt? Let's find out.
Yeah.
Because we knew about her brother a little bit more.
So what were the questions that you had? In other words, were you always leading with the facts and then filling in the blanks fictionally? Or did you let the fiction take over and this is where I want the story to go? And you stayed with a basic arc of what you knew to be true.
Okay. I did a lot of research. So in some ways, I had tent poles. That's kind of a, you know, Hollywood movie term. What are
yep.
the tent poles?
We have the same thing in radio.
Right.
But it means a different thing.
Different thing. But pegs. And I went and did research about my Uncle A.B. Little Yiddle Lorber.
I'm sorry, say that again.
A.B. Little Yiddle Lorber. Okay. He was 5'2".
I love that. My favorite Dr. Seuss story, by the way. Go ahead.
Yes. 5'2", good with a knife. My favorite Dr. Seuss story. In the newspapers, there were about four things over, 20 years of this period. It was like 1905 to 1935. He stabbed a kid in Union Square and it made the papers because the kid said he was not the toughest kid on 14th Street. And I was off and running. He was a material witness to a murder. He was the subject of an assassination plot in Coney Island. So I had these kind of things that happened to him. But within that, I wanted to create her story and what her life was like. And I think, I was reading a lot of Elena Ferrante at the time. So there's a lot of, a lot of emotional intensity that I think people will either be super turned on by or, I think that they will be turned on by.
No, I wouldn't say, I don't think there's a downside to that. I mean, yeah. I think it will be super turned on by it. It's a fascinating story, but it's also, you set the period. I asked very early on about Brooklyn because it just seems like, I know the story took place in Brooklyn, but it just seems like, but even if you were casting it, you would want it to take place in Brooklyn, right?
Right.
And it's a perfect.
Yeah, and Brooklyn, I went back and I don't know Williamsburg that well, but my uncle had a place at 128 Marcy Avenue. And I learned later, in a period after this book had finished, that that became something like the Ravenite Social Club, which was John Gotti's place on Mulberry Street. And it was like the Williamsburg Boys Club. So there was this really teeming neighborhood in Williamsburg that was new immigrants. And there was a huge, I guess you would say, Napolitano, in neighborhood where there was this feast, which I saw when I first moved to Brooklyn, called the Giglio. And so I kind of loved it in the way that I love, all of those Day of the Dead movies and the things happen while Day of the Dead is happening. But I'd never seen anything with the Giglio, which is equally astounding. So I really wanted to kind of bring those things forward.
In bringing those things forward, you get to tell quite a story about a time, a place, and ultimately about your grandmother. So you got to learn a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, you alluded to this a moment ago, but that has to be, that has to be emotional.
It was a heartbreaking journey for me. I have to say, and I've written, and you know that I write movie reviews, and I've been writing for, three decades, four decades, whatever, God knows. And I always thought, it would get easier. But I'm not whining. What I'm saying is this was day in, day out, so emotional. And it also deals with depression, which runs, and I like to say in a positive way, like fudge ripple through the, through my family. There's just so many different, flavors of depression that people did not talk about and was not treated well. And so when I went through those parts of the plot and I found, say, a death certificate of my grandfather who had died in a mental institution. And you see on a piece of paper in black and white, like how he died and when he died. And for me, it was, there was so much that is unspoken that I want to speak about, that I want to talk about and address and let go.
How's it feel to let go?
It feels really good. I feel in some ways like, I certainly feel like this is the best book I've ever written and the most emotional work I've ever written. But I also feel like I'm championing my father, my late father, who died too young in his early 60s. He was a union leader and he had this really rough childhood. But he was always positive, optimistic, joyous, trying to change the world. And so I feel like I was able to resurrect some things and champion my father in a way that I hadn't before.
How long ago did he die?
Decades ago.
Yeah,
actually.
He was
62. I was 36.
Okay, so
20 something years
ago. Mm-hmm. I asked the question because my mom passed. It'll be 10 years ago next Monday. And I'm dealing with I didn't know it was 10 years ago until I had to look it up because I was having all of these strong, amazing, weird, grieving feelings that were as emotional as when she originally passed. And it's a tap on the shoulder, like, oh, what the hell's going on? And
right.
Then as I started to look, it was like, oh, it's been 10 years.
Right.
It's not like I was telling myself, oh, it's 10 years, and then you start to reflect.
No, it's that it comes to you.
It comes to you.
Yeah.
So the idea to be able to, and I've been talking to my brothers and my family about it, and even that's freeing.
I think that, you know, a lot of these things are, okay, that everybody grieves differently, which
right.
is why there's so much conflict when a central person dies in a family, because some people want to shut it off. Some people want to talk about them as if they were the god that they wanted to be. I like to talk about someone as they really were, the good and the bad. And I want to know what my feelings are. So a book like this really lets me go back to the Brooklyn where my father was raised. And I'm not saying that I've channeled it. I'm not saying that I know, but I do know that I'm my father's daughter.
Right. And also that story is universal enough for us to enjoy it and love it as the work of art that it is.
Thank you.
Yeah. I also think, I like what you said about the good and the bad. I said to my wife, actually this morning, I said to her, I feel like I'm, the more I go into this with my mom, I think of myself as, I'm making her out to be a saint. And my mother said, well, no, you're making her out to be who she was, number one. Number mm-hmm. two, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
And number three, you know who it was and that explores it to the point where you can say to yourself, yeah, I had a pretty good idea of who this person was, but most importantly of what they meant to you.
Right, exactly. And I think this book, because there are fraught relationships between sisters and brothers and mothers, and I've been through it all. I mean,
right.
I was young when I had a year when my father died, my mother's mother died, and her brother died. So I was in my late 30s, and I just like sat down, and then I wrote a memoir. But that's not a memoir that I share. But that memoir was really, I felt like I'd processed a lot of things, and it's sitting in a desk, and I know what happened, and I can pull it out like. I know it's there.
The name of the novel is Bittersweet Brooklyn. It's a beautiful story.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
It's a really, really beautiful
story. I appreciate
that,
Joe.
Okay, so we have a couple of minutes. Let's talk about movies. It's the holiday time. Everything's coming out. I've seen some stuff. What do we need to see before the end?
I will seg from my book.
Yes.
What you need to see. I think that Roma, in many ways, which is Alfonso Cuarón's movie, it is going to be in movie theaters the 21st. My review will show up on AARP.com later this week. And for me, he's also, it's Alfonso Cuarón looking back autobiographically at growing up bourgeois, basically upper middle class, in Mexico City in the 70s as the student riots come, and it's told through the viewpoint of the family servant, indigenous servant, beloved servant. And it will come out on Netflix, and I'm not going to get into the middle of where you should see it. I will just say, see it, and see it with your phone off, see it with, really
allow
bathe
it
in
to envelop you. Yeah.
I love that. What else have you seen?
I saw Boy Erased.
Yes.
I saw a beautiful boy.
I know you're on the sad the tough parenting.
Yeah, I liked one more than the other.
Which one did you prefer?
Boy Erased.
Yeah.
I think Lucas Hedges has a beautiful performance. I think Nicole Kidman has a beautiful performance. Even Russell Crowe, I'll give credit to.
Crowe is a better actor than I think a husband person.
Yes, but, well, absolutely.
You know, he's a great actor.
But it wasn't bad. I have a lot of issues with Beautiful Boy.
Yeah, I do too.
But again, a nice performance by Timothée Chalamet and even Steve
Carell.
Yeah, although I don't know if he was right for it.
I will say this as we're looking forward.
Yep.
That movie, Beautiful Boy, brings up the idea of Steve Carell, comic, trying to do dramatic performances. The other Steve Coogan, plays in Stan and Ollie. He plays Stan Laurel. And I have to say, it's a master class in a comedic actor who can also do drama. And that, I don't think Stan and Ollie is like the perfect movie, but that performance of Steve Coogan playing Stan Laurel is heartbreaking and hilarious.
Yeah. What else do you think we'll be talking about come awards time?
You know, have you seen Green Book yet?
I have not, but I'm very excited. I think it opens today.
It opens today. I love this movie. There's going to be, I think, anything about race in America, past or present, Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, excuse me. I apologize.
No, no problem. And I'm proud I can say Mahershala Ali. I learned that, you know, the Moonlight year. They are both fantastic actors, and it's a real life story about an African American jazz pianist who lives in Carnegie Hall, who decides to do a Southern loop at the holidays to go and do concerts in the South, and he gets Viggo Mortensen's kind of jamoke to be his roadie, his chauffeur, and also his muscle in case things get nasty.
Which
they
do.
And they do.
Yeah.
And it really, I love both actors to the moon and beyond. Like Viggo, you know, every time he astonishes me. And this is directed by Peter Farrelly of the Farrelly Brothers of There's Something About Mary and Dumb and Dumber. And it is a fantastic, you sit down, it takes you from the first scene all the way to the last. You laugh, you cry, you love these people. And I think it really is a good holiday movie.
It's a beautiful, with the trailer and the
where you've seen the whole
scene,
movie.
Oh, have you? Yeah. Well, it's beautiful. It really is neat. And I've seen the two actors talk about it on an extended interview, and I thought it was it looks really good. What else? What else do you think?
You know, people are still seeing A Star Is Born, which I'm kind of curious how that's going to fly. Whether that is going to, you know, make it to Best Picture. I think Roma, as we discussed, is going to be pulled out in order to be Best Foreign Language Film because it's in Spanish. There's a lot. The Favorite is something that people are seeing.
And that hasn't opened locally yet, has it?
You know, I don't think so. I went to the city and saw it. It's with Olivia Colman, Rachel Weisz, and Emma Stone. And it's kind of this restoration body, all about Eve kind of thing. I'm a period movie junkie. I felt like it was kind of wild and interesting and kind of weirdly, you know, weirdly erotic. At the end, I was a little bit smoking my cigarette going, is that all there is?
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people love that movie. And I wish I could say the director's name, Yorgos Lanthimos. He did The Lobster, which I adored.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Yeah, and The Square was the second one, which I didn't like so much. And this one, you know what? I think in his effort to get these really crazy female characters who are sexy, and there's kind of this weird three-way, he loses the fact that these historical characters also had intellects and political savvy and had a bigger, more interesting history?
Well, you have we've got a lot to do, don't we? We have to read the new book.
Yes.
We have good films to see.
Tons of good films to
see.
And
you can and you'll come back Oscar time and talk to us, right?
And we'll talk just movies.
That's good. I like that idea. Thelma Adams' new novel is Bittersweet Brooklyn. It is published by Lake Union. Are you doing any events locally or anything we need to know?
So far, no events locally. I'm just writing the next book, which is also May the Circle Be Unbroken. Very much a New York and upstate book.
Cool.
Getting ready for the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage.
Well, we look forward to all of that. The new novel is Bittersweet Brooklyn. It is published by Lake Union. We are out of time. I thank all of the folks responsible for the show. Have a beautiful Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll see you back here on Monday.